Can you give me some relief?
Everybody, and welcome to episode 42 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as usual, joined by member of the Church of Scientology, operating Thetan Level 3, Wall of Fire, Brian. Brian, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. I had my Thetan levels measured in Times Square about 20 minutes ago. They said that it was my levels were good. They asked me for 25% of my life savings, which I cut them a check. I mean, isn't that what you're supposed to do? I'm feeling good.
Yeah, as you should be. Kudos this week on getting the drink of the week poll back up there after a couple of week hiatus.
Understood.
We had the whiskey sour going up against the Cosmopolitan. For a minute there, it looked like we'd be Sex and the City in it with some Cosmos tonight. But Whiskey Sour came in strong at the end. So kudos, my friend. Whiskey Sour is our drink tonight. How did yours turn out?
I don't know. I haven't tried it yet.
Now, I'm going to go out on a limb because I know you. I love you.
Okay.
I'm going to say that there is no egg white whatsoever in your Whiskey Sour.
I can guarantee it. Why would I? Okay. First off, I'm going to say this. I looked up Whiskey Sour recipes. Not one listed an egg white. Because if it did,
really?
you would have heard me bitching about it.
See, there were a number of recipes that call for it. In fact, I watched a video that said a true proper Whiskey Sour should have the egg white. But it is acceptable to leave out the egg white. So what is in your Whiskey Sour tonight?
Whiskey.
Okay.
Lemon juice.
Okay.
And whiskey, lemon juice, and there was a simple syrup.
There you go. So I went my recipe.
Plain.
There you go. I did the egg white, which you shake for about 10 seconds, get it nice and fluffed up. Then a couple ounces of whiskey, half ounce of lemon juice, and 3/4 ounce of a heavy simple syrup, which is a 2-to-1 ratio instead of the usual 1-to-1. So I went fancy. I went all out tonight. I didn't screw around on drink of the week. So cheers to you, my friend.
Cheers to you. And while you're taking a sip, I'm going to ask you a question. How long does simple syrup last in the refrigerator after you make it?
Typically 2 weeks. How's yours?
Actually, not bad.
No, it's a good drink. In fact, I'm a little upset at myself. I didn't have fresh lemons, so I had to use just, you know, bottled lemon juice.
Oh, my God. What are you, some backwards yeehaw?
So I think with some fresh lemon juice in here, this would taste even better. But it's a pretty damn fine drink.
It actually is a pretty fine drink. It reminds me of the summers I used to spend as a child up at my uncle's house in the Catskills. He would he'd seat me on his lap on the back porch while we would look over the pond that he had on his property, and Aunt Mare would make the evening beverages, which were usually a whiskey sour. And nice. I would sit on his lap on the rocking chair, and he would.
Would he ask you for relief?
No. He stop.
Okay.
That's gross. He would let me take a couple sips of his whiskey sour. He liked to call it Jesus juice. As I was drinking. And then after a couple sips and, you know, the couple hours go to go by, he would actually have Aunt Mare make me my own whiskey sour. And, it would be bedtime. And let's just say I'm in therapy right now.
All right. Well, I'm glad that this is bringing back some fond and not so fond memories for you. Mm. So I would say this is a keeper, whiskey sours.
The next
time we get together, we'll have to celebrate over some whiskey sours.
Will you be treating egg whites? Now, what did you do with the egg whites again?
You get your egg white and then you shake it for like 10 seconds in your shaker first, because that gives it, it breaks up the proteins, gives it a nice creamy froth to it, and then you mix the rest of the ingredients in. So really gives it a nice mouthfeel.
All right.
So thanks to everybody that voted for Drink of the Week. Again, as always, if you have any suggestions for our drinks, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, you know the usual stuff. So let's move it on to This Week in Racism.
This
week
in
racism.
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 So a rough week overall for Governor Ralph Northam. Could not manage any votes this past week. So our winner is Julie Edwards, 100% to 0. In addition, Brian, I heard he was kicked off of one of the legs of his quote-unquote listening tour in Virginia today.
Yes, he was supposed to. Part of his statewide listening tours was he was going to stop at one of the colleges that are considered, now this is not my terminology, it's considered one of the traditionally black colleges where he was going to listen. And I believe that the student population decided they really didn't want him there. So his staff decided it was a wise move to cancel that stop on his listening tour.
Okay, so losing in his listening tour, losing in This Week in Racism, Julie Edwards will be looking for win number two this week. Again, unfortunately, a number of contenders to consider this week in Washington, D.C. Georgia Representative Drew Ferguson was found to have a copy of the book General Robert Edwards Lee, Soldier, Citizen, and Christian Patriot on display in his office. The book was open to a page in the book that stated that blacks were better here in this country under slavery than they were back in Africa. Going down to Louisiana, photos from a 25-year-old police yearbook surfaced that showed white Baton Rouge police officers in blackface before attempting a sting operation selling crack in black neighborhoods. Going out to Playa Vista, California, a video went viral showing a woman berating a mother and her young son on the street. The woman kept asking what mix they were and calling them ugly, poor, and subhuman.
Ugh.
Going international in Brazil, the Vogue style editor Donata Morales resigned after a photo surfaced showing she had used black people as props for a, quote, slave and master theme she had at her 50th birthday party.
Jesus.
Coming back to the States, in Parkersburg, West Virginia, another viral video showing a white woman swearing at a Spanish-speaking manager of the Tampico Mexican restaurant. And then going all the way over to London, where Burberry is apologizing for a hoodie with a design featuring a noose that debuted during Fashion Week. That hoodie has since been removed from their collection. But our worst person of the week, and you know she's the worst because normally we need some video and audio. This is one of our few contenders without any video or audio. This is Ashley Rose, who had been a social media editor for the Huffington Post. That was until her managers were alerted to an Instagram account of hers loaded with racist invective. She used a number of racial slurs, including the N-word, talked about a race war in this country, asked who would be the next Trayvon Martin, and also used a number of racial stereotypes in her comments. She has since been fired from her job at HuffPo. So some great vetting of employees over there at the Huffington Post. So Ashley Rose, she's going up against Julie Edwards for This Week in Racism. So head on over to the Facebook page, cast your votes. I think votes were a little light this past week because Julie was just that much more horrible an individual than the governor. But I think we have a pretty even matchup between Julie and Ashley. Brian, your thoughts on this week's matchup?
You know, I think that what Julie is bringing to the table is strong rage, which comes across in the audio tape that we have and which you played in its entirety last week. I don't know if you have it. Maybe we want to play it again. What our candidate this week brings is just a plethora of social media hatred, which is something that we don't really have much on This Week in Racism, this segment that we do. For the most part, it really is real life racism. It'll be interesting to see how the masses react to the fact that this is no audio, no video, but she is bringing the smoke, the fire, the heat truly hateful comments coming from somebody who works in the media. If you want to consider the Huffington Post the media, I like to call it the enemy of the people. So we're going to have to see just how I don't know how the people are going to go.
And Huffington Post, typically a very liberal publication, so you don't typically expect to see that level of hatred and racism. But clearly they are equal opportunity offenders. So again, go to the Facebook page, check it out, cast your vote, and we're going to move on to Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Still love that theme song. I really don't know that I've done anything better than that up to this point. So maybe I should work on that.
I think you're, was it Rocket Man?
Tariff Man, thank you.
Tariff Man. Tariff Man, it's possible that it topped it. It's possible. Just because you were genuinely singing along to it, which I give you credit for.
I mean, should I play Tariff Man? Because it's like 4 minutes long. I don't want to play too long of an audio clip. Well, we're in the middle of Beef of the Week. I'm getting off on a tangent here. So if I can state my Beef of the Week.
Sure.
My Beef of the Week this week is with snow removal technology.
Mm.
In that, I had to drive back from State College, Pennsylvania to Philadelphia yesterday. And apparently, there is only one snowplow that they share in the middle of this great state of mine, because most of the major roads were not plowed up until I got to the turnpike. It's usually a 3-hour drive altogether. It took me 3 hours alone to make the hour and a half drive from State College to the turnpike. So my question is, after all the advancements that we've had in all technology, why we're still using all this antiquated plows and salt and everything for snow removal? We've got electric cars, we've got sex robots, we've got virtual reality porn. Why can't we put a little bit more work into taking care of this snow removal a little bit better? That's all.
It's a valid complaint. I don't want to say complaint.
Yes.
It's one of our swear words. That was a valid beef.
Thank you. What's your beef about this week, my friend?
My beef is the 24-hour news cycle, and how it is. It literally is exhausting my life as a consumer of current events, as a consumer of what is going on in the world today. It literally is. It's the point now where something is important, the most talked about subject of the week. You go to take a 1-hour nap, you wake up, and nobody cares about it anymore. We've all moved on.
What's like our
I'm exhausted by it.
It's like our list of topics for this show, and people, you may find this hard to believe, we do actually prepare for this show every week. And once we've got an episode in the can, we start a list for the following week, and it never fails that whatever, like the first day after an episode, whatever is the top news story that we pop on there, by the time we get around to recording, you know, 5, 6, 7 days later, it has already burned through the news cycle and is old news. And then we've got 100 other things. I mean, just today, there were 3 or 4 items that came into the news that we were like, well, we could possibly talk about this because everything from the end of last week and beginning of this week is already out of people's minds. So I'm with you on that.
I thought that one of the big things we were going to talk about this week was Nick Sandman, Covington High School teenager, who is suing the Washington Post for $250 million. Now, this was in the news about 4 days ago, and at the time, it literally was top 3 news story of the day. Right now, nobody cares, and I'm on that side. I could care less.
Right. I mean, you know, you've got Portland police accused of colluding with a right-wing hate group.
No collusion. Again, no collusion.
Came out last Friday or Saturday. No one seems, that's just, you know, everyone's like, all right, so that's, you know, Portland police are racist. We got to deal with that. So I'm with you. Speaking of being back in the news, one of our previous This Week in Racism, Racism Madness contestants, Roseanne, back in the news, making videos again. We have it here for you. It's a good one. Take a listen.
That Green New Deal that That Farrakhan loving bitch, I don't even remember her name. The bug-eyed bitch that looks like a realtor. She got them realtor eyes. I can always tell by realtor eyes. She got them. Bug-eyed lying bitch. Farrakhan fan. Israel hater. Lefty. Dumbass. Dumbasses. Dumb as they get. So I'm going to try to correct some of the mistakes she's made, like costing hundreds of people decent paying jobs because, I don't know, they breathe carbon in their air or some horse shit. She got paid to do that. Can you imagine? Paid to decimate communities. But that's what the Dems have been doing. That's what socialism does. And I just got to say it. Socialism is a fake fucking con. It's just like capitalism, but it comes from the bottom up, not the top down. It's a fucking Ponzi scheme and a con game. You know, here's why they want them immigrants. First of all, because all their buddies are hiring them for less than minimum wage. That's a big draw. And second, because no Americans are going to vote for their ass anymore because we woke up to the shit you're doing. You see, you're decimating whole communities in inner cities while you live up there in a vineyard and a mansion. Okay, that's what socialism gets us. Well, we don't want none of that shit. Okay? We don't want what you did in Venezuela. And don't say, but the U.S. is the reason. Yeah, okay.
So, sticking with racist themes, talking about the immigrants there, I assume she was referring to AOC, talking about the bug-eyed bitch there.
Yeah, but was she saying that the bug-eyed bitch lives on a vineyard?
Well, and that's where I get confused, because if I remember, AOC initially couldn't move down to Washington, D.C. until her congressional salary kicked in, because right. She couldn't afford, you know, the place she was living in New York, plus her D.C. apartment. So I don't feel that she was, I don't think she's living in a vineyard anywhere.
No, but it was disclosed that she's living in a high-end luxury high-rise apartment complex.
I did see that.
So
I I'm not getting the Farrakhan connection. I don't remember her making any comments about Louis Farrakhan or Israel. So I'm again, it's Roseanne. It's all over
the
board.
Did it sound like Roseanne was slurring her words a little bit?
She was chewing. I mean, if you watch the video, it looks like she was in a Five Guys. Okay. So I assume maybe she was eating some of their free peanuts,
or
waiting for an Uber or something.
Where she was eating one of the 5 pounds of fries that they give you when you order a single burger.
Also very possible. But another issue she brings up is she was alluding to Amazon pulling out of Long Island City for their HQ2 project. Brian, you're a New Yorker. That's in your neck of the woods. Your thoughts on Amazon canceling that project in New York?
Good riddance. One of the things that New York has, as time has progressed over the past decade or so, one of the things that New York City is losing in droves is affordable housing, a middle class presence in this city. And what Amazon was going to do was to snap up real estate in one of the few remaining areas in Queens that is close to Manhattan that had not been already overtaken by real estate developers, and were going to literally slam it full of office space, slam it full of basically, I mean, and the thing was, these aren't reasonably paying jobs. Amazon is not known as the employer of the common man. They've been known to pay the factory workers that are packaging your orders, and let's face it, there are some people in upstate New York and Saratoga County who've never even ordered from Amazon. So
shocking,
I mean,
as that may be to believe.
I know, it's crazy, but Amazon is not known to be this great employer. One of the issues that the people that were opposing the deal were saying that New York City is literally handing Amazon over $3 billion in tax breaks to come and take office space in Long Island City, and that the return on that investment was going to be quite small, very minimal. And as somebody who lives in this area, I'm glad Amazon's not coming. Let them take that area, let it remain for the people, and take those jobs and bring it to an area where unemployment is a problem.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, if there's one area of the country that could use some affordable housing, it's the New York City area. And some of that space that Amazon was going to take was currently designated for that affordable housing. I think what also didn't help Amazon was the fact that they didn't want to speak with the local politicians. They didn't want to speak with the local community. They were doing everything they can to circumvent and try and do everything directly with the governor and mayor's office and just try and get this deal done.
Well, one of the reasons is that, you know, is the approach they were taking is that they expected to be kowtowed by the local politicians, because that's the experience that they have received almost their entire existence from the Seattle government. Seattle has bent over backwards to provide Amazon exactly what it is they need. So Amazon thought that New York would basically be able to do the exact same thing, that they would be welcomed as saviors of land, that, you know, whatever demands they made, the politicians would figure out ways to provide them whatever they wanted. And suddenly they announced that they're coming to New York, that they're getting all this aid, and they did not feel that they needed to be responsible to actually verbalize, their intentions to community leaders, to local politicians. I mean, it kind of feels like this was a de Blasio Cuomo for those in the future who will have forgotten the people I'm talking about. The current New York City mayor is Bill de Blasio. The current governor is Andrew Cuomo. And I think these guys sat there and wanted some kind of legacy. I think they're focused on being able to put their name on something so that, you know, 20 years from now, people can say, de Blasio, he brought Amazon to this town. And he was, you know, it's how much are you willing to give so you can be able to say you did something?
Yeah. And is there anyone in this country that people have more conflicted feelings about than Jeff Bezos?
Well, it depends. It depends. If his dick pics leak, this whole thing may have gone out the different way. I mean, if
my point. Like, you know, the Washington Post reports something bad on Donald Trump, we're like, yeah, Jeff Bezos. And then we find out, you know, Amazon workers are peeing in bottles because they're not allowed to take, you know, work breaks during the day. And it's like, boo, Jeff Bezos. And then, yeah, he fights back against National Enquirer. Yeah, Jeff Bezos. But yeah, we're going to try and jam HQ2 down New York City's throats. Boo, Jeff Bezos. So he's a very interesting individual. But yeah, it's I can't think of anybody that really splits people's emotions so much across the board.
And let's also throw this in there. I mean, Roseanne's talking about how evil AOC is, blah, blah, blah. Does Roseanne have any skin in this game? Does Roseanne give a shit what the quality of life is in New York City?
No. In fact, if anything, she probably hates New York because it's filled with those left coast liberals, you know, it's those elitists.
Of course. I mean, you know, her and Jesse Jackson get together, snort some Ambien and call this Jaime Town.
And does she think capitalism is as bad as socialism? Because she said socialism is the same thing as capitalism, except it's from the bottom up then rather than the top down. Well, okay, what's your point?
Shouldn't it be more from the bottom up? She could be libertarian.
Very possibly.
Which is basically saying, listen, the whole system's fucked no matter how you look at it.
So if that's the case, then why not just try anything?
Because that's not going to get her voice heard if she just goes true. Whatever.
I mean, thank God for social media.
I thought the bitch was white!
Or else she'd have no way to get this insane message out.
I thought you would have that. God bless, I thought you would have that video pulled up.
I don't know that I still have her.
I thought the bitch was boy.
Sorry, I disappoint you. Do I not have that on my sound effects page?
I do not have that. It's one of my favorite clips that you have put together. That
you would think that would be one.
Kavanaugh,
but,
and our Supreme Court Justice Harvey Kavanaugh. Like beer.
I liked beer.
Like beer.
You know which sound effect I do manage to hold on to.
Which one?
But I digress. We won't get into Trump breathing. We will get into a definite sound bite that we will be adding to our archives later. But first, kind of staying on this week in racism themed. You know, a few weeks back, I had some people ask me when the Jussie Smollett case initially hit the news, why we didn't include that in our This Week in Racism contest for that week. And I remember it hit the news on the same day we recorded an episode, so there wasn't a lot of information yet. We try not to put anything into This Week in Racism unless it's been vetted a little bit. And, you know, again, we talked about that news cycle, you know, that when it first comes out, you know, he claims he's attacked, he was beaten, bleach was poured on him, a noose was wrapped around his neck, people shout out on that, you know, this is MAGA country. You know, so right away it seems like a slam dunk hate crime that would go into This Week in Racism. By the time we record the episode the following week, you know, the story's starting to fall apart a little bit. You know, he doesn't want to share phone records with the police at that point. You know, he doesn't want to go in and be interviewed again without his lawyers present. You know, no one can find video to corroborate the situation that he explained. And now here we are a few weeks later, and now he's been arrested for filing a fake police report, which is a felony in Chicago. Apparently, he was upset by his salary. He was seeking some publicity. You know, I forgot he even wrote himself a threatening letter prior to the assault. So today, you know, he was arrested. The Chicago police superintendent came out, made a statement really tearing into him. He set bond at $100,000, which he was released, and apparently has returned to the set of Empire in Chicago to keep filming. The great comment was from his defense lawyers, you know, when reached out for comment, you know, they said, well, Mr. Smollett enjoys the presumption of innocence at this point, and we look forward to presenting a case and a defense. Never coming out and saying that he didn't fake all this. Just, well, he enjoys the presumption of innocence right now. Have you seen anything as crazy as this in a while, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, a week ago, we were watching Abducted in Plain Sight, which I believe you may have a couple notes on. But this is it really that outlandish? You've got a Hollywood actor who's unhappy with his salary on his TV show, and he fakes being. I mean, I grew up in the age of Tawana Brawley, where it was an African American teenage girl who went missing and suddenly comes out of an abandoned building saying that she was kidnapped by three white police officers who assaulted her and smeared feces on her, and it tore New York City in half in terms of race relations. And later on, it came out that she had made the whole thing up because she was hanging out with a boyfriend and she didn't want to get in trouble by her mom.
Now, you can almost see a kid with a lack of judgment, you know, doing something like that. But you have a grown man here who, if you're upset about your salary, you know, renegotiate your contract rather than committing a felony and, you know, hurting the cause that you are claiming to be on the side of.
All right, let me ask you another question.
Please.
He's an actor. Have you ever met people that were actors?
Not often, no. I don't roll with the same crowd that you do.
No, no, no. Even like local theater, even people that like acted in high school drama.
Yeah.
These are not normal, logical, rational. These are people that live in their heads and their dreams. Like, the sense of entitlement is ridiculous. This guy probably saw himself as, you know, two scenes away from winning an Emmy and then going to an Oscar and then being the next Black Panther. You know, the delusions of an actor are insane. There's no sense that this is a grown man who thinks rational. I mean, not only that. And I don't know what detail you want to go into, but he hires two Nigerian guys.
Brothers.
To commit brothers.
Two brothers.
Well, listen, no. You mean that they're actually related?
Yes.
You're not meaning that euphemistically, like we would say on the street.
I'm not. No.
All right. But he hires these two very dark-skinned Nigerian men, and he pays them to assault him, even though in today's day and age, there are security cameras everywhere. But he somehow is going to say that he was assaulted by two white men who sat there, threw bleach on him, attacked him, used an anti-gay slur while wearing MAGA hat. Oh, excuse me. No, they weren't wearing MAGA hats. They said this is MAGA country.
And also, apparently, the police have a copy of a check that he used to pay the two guys.
Why would you pay it? Did it say how much he paid them?
$3,500.
That's kind of pricey. I figured you could do that for a lot cheaper.
But did no one learn from Jerry Springer's lesson years ago when he used a check to pay for a prostitute? You don't leave a paper trail for the money.
No, you definitely do not.
Because that is rule number one when committing a felony. Also, there were phone records that showed Jesse speaking to the brothers an hour before the incident took place, and then an hour after, and then the days following the attack.
Which could be anything. But the fact is, I mean, and if we want to take the story even further back, he apparently wrote like a ransom letter with, letters cut out of magazines he sent to the producers of the show where they used his last name and I believe another attempt at an ethnic slur and a childish drawing of a human being hanging from a noose from a tree. Right. And he was furious that the producers did not respond appropriately to this.
And the letter also contained a white powder, which turned out to be crushed ibuprofen. Mm.
So I wonder whose job it was in the office to do a bump of that and then come back and be like, nope, not what you thought it was. Sorry, guys.
So
put your straws away. There was a number
of celebrities that had initially supported him. They've been taking down their social media posts. Donald Trump had even mentioned back at the time that the incident was horrible. Of course, took advantage to go on Twitter today and ask for Jesse to apologize of the tens of millions of MAGA followers that he feels were insulted by this. I don't know the fact that Jesse possibly, potentially, allegedly lied about this attack really changes the fact that a number of the president's followers are still racist and will be racist regardless as to whether this is true or not.
Can I say that I'm a little confused what kind of name Jesse is?
That I'm not aware of also. I don't know if it's a shortening.
Because every time you say his first name, I'm expecting you to say the body right afterwards.
Is it Jasopheles? Is it? I have no idea.
Oh, what is it short for?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Is it necessarily Jesse, or is it something else?
His actual
first name is Justin, but he is better known as Jesse. So I don't know how he got that nickname. He was in Mighty Ducks, of course. That was his first major role. He also appeared in Rob Reiner's North, a horrible, horrible movie. But this is, you know, so he was doing this he had an issue. He had a beef, let's say, about his salary. How much do you think he was earning per episode for filming Empire on Fox?
$50,000.
So depending on the reports, anywhere from $65,000 to $100,000 per episode.
Okay.
How many actors out there would kill to be making that kind of money on a regular basis?
How many actors right now are working as waiters in New York City, in Los Angeles, in Dallas, Fort Worth, in Abilene, Texas, in Dubuque?
Are there many actors in Dubuque?
I couldn't tell you, but I guarantee.
But I understand what you're saying.
But there are actors struggling everywhere, and the point being is the fact that he felt that if he were the victim of a hate crime, suddenly Hollywood producers would be like, "Let's get this kid in our play, in our movie, in our TV show. Let's give him more money." He's now, and you would think that if it was actually bleach, it would have just damaged the skin. The moment where the first moment to give away that there was something up was when he was refusing to turn over his phone to the police.
Right.
because he sat there. Part of his story was that he was on the phone with his manager when this happened. And they said, well, can we pull your phone records? Because it's possible that we can not only confirm that you were on the phone, but we may be able to pull up a recording because it's so fresh that, you know, it's possible there's a recording somewhere where they can actually hear the attack taking place. And he was like, slow your roll. Maybe not. Not getting my phone. That was the first step of suspicions. And it only got worse as the week went on.
Yeah. And he doubled down about a week ago. I mean, he was on an interview on Good Morning America. He commented that, you know, it feels like if I had said it was a Muslim or a Mexican or someone black, you know, I feel like the doubters would have supported me much more. So, you know, he knew he was lying, and then he doubles down on it, which won't help him in the long run.
So, no, not at all.
There hasn't been a court date set yet, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, I would anticipate this is the kind of thing you would try and plea out on. I don't think you want to have all your dirty laundry like this aired at a trial.
Now, my question is, he's definitely going to plead. The real question is, what happens to his career afterwards? Is this the kind of thing where he's going to do jail time over?
I mean, you know, it carries a potential 3-year sentence, this particular charge. I think what you will probably end up seeing is he will plead to time served. He'll get some sort of probation. And more than likely, what the punishment will be is he will have to pay back the city of Chicago for the cost of the investigation.
Will he be paying them back in bratwurst?
In sausage?
Here's some Chicago Cub tickets. Yeah, I don't know. It's just a very bizarre story. And the thing being is that, going back to my argument earlier about the 24-hour news cycle, 48 hours ago, I don't even knew that this guy was particularly on my radar. Yet for the past two days, top story on every news venue.
Yep, no doubt. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Speaking of crazy stories, you know, you all know out there, you know Ron and Brian loves us some documentaries. And
we do.
There is a great one up on Netflix right now. If you haven't watched it, we will be spoiling it for you. If you have, enjoy the ride. And that is, of course, Abducted in Plain Sight. It is the story of a young girl, Jan Broberg, who was abducted, obviously, by a neighbor, Robert Berchtold, who they refer to as B during the documentary. You also meet probably two of the worst parents on the planet, Bob and Marianne Broberg. It was one of those stories that was crazy from the get-go, and then as it went on, managed to get even crazier. So it's so crazy that the story of the abduction, they just give it to you right up front. Like, it's no buildup. Like, it's you're basically like 10 to 15 minutes in, and then like it's October, you know, October 17th, 1974. You know, B decides to take Jan horseback riding. You know, the mom's like, yeah, whatever. It's just my daughter. Go ahead, take her. And then they don't come back that night. So, again, I'm not a parent. You're not a parent. But if someone were to take your child and didn't return that day, how long would you wait before you called the proper authorities on that?
I would say maybe 3 hours.
3 hours. 5 days these guys waited. Well, I shouldn't say 5 days. They called the FBI on Saturday, got an answering machine, which apparently FBI wasn't 7 days a week back in the 70s, but got an answering machine and said, hey, this office is closed, but you can call our other office. So the mom's like, well, you know, my daughter's only been gone 3 days. I don't really want to trouble anybody. So let's wait and see if we can get somebody. So finally, 5 days later, they finally call the FBI, and the FBI gets to work on this. And that's not even the worst thing these parents do along the way as we go through this entire story. They talk to B's brother, Joe, who's basically like, yeah, you know, my brother's a sexual pervert and a pedophile, but he can sell cars like nobody's business. Like, I understand family ties and all that, but how do you defend or seemingly not condemn your brother when you know that he's a sexual pervert, you know that he's a pedophile, you know that he's a kidnapper, you know, at what point are you like, yeah, maybe he's a bad guy. Maybe I shouldn't be defending him, you know, on this documentary.
It was one of the most bizarre stories that I have ever seen, and not because not in some instances because of the behavior of people that are involved in it. That here's a man who, with his family, connects, and I think it was through the church, wasn't it, or how did he originally?
They were all members of the Church of Latter-day Saints.
Okay, well, apparently. That's a church I will probably never join now, but thanks for the heads up. But
well, you're in Scientology pretty heavy, so I wouldn't expect you to change.
Thetan level lowering. And so they become friends through church. Next thing you know, this guy is taking pictures of their daughter. At what point does he start sharing a bed with her? Is that before the first abduction or after?
That is actually before the abduction. So kind of, well, let's jump back a couple years in this timeline. So first, in like the fall of 1972, B starts to flirt with Jan's mom, Marianne. And they end up fooling around a bit on a church trip. No sex then, just, you know, above the sweater type stuff. So that's back in fall of 72. In June of 73... the Brobergs let Jan go on vacation with the entire Birchtold family to Seattle. Apparently on that trip, Jan said, like, she apparently was drugged and woke up alone in a hotel room with B, and he was naked. So this is before the abduction. And then in January of 1974, you know, B gets reprimanded by the High Council of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints because of his involvement with another young girl. So then he claims that he's being treated for the abuse he received as a child. B tells the Brobergs that as part of his therapy, he needs to spend time alone with their daughters. And Bob and Marianne are like, well, that sounds about right. Okay. So that's when he starts spending more time with Jan, and that's when he starts sleeping in Jan's bed in the Broberg home. So they're just like, all right, and you know, again, he had a fake doctor if they were to call, and he even said, oh, if you want to call and speak to my therapist, they never called to check on this story.
Of course not. Why would they?
And then in October of that year is when the abduction occurred. Now, also, prior to this abduction, Bob Broberg, the father of Jan, tells a great story. And I know you're out there saying to yourself, there can't be a better story than the Fyre Festival documentary where the guy was literally willing to suck dick to get 170,000 bottles of Evian water. You would think that there's nothing out there to top that. But we have a short clip for you of Bob talking about a time when B came to him during the day. He was very frustrated about his relationship with his wife and said, Bob, would you take a ride with me? And let's let Bob tell the story.
And just so...
Sorry.
This is the father of a girl who is being molested by this guy.
Not yet, but it's in the works.
So this is before the molestation starts?
This is before the abduction, before the molestation starts.
Okay.
This is before. Let's hear what Bob has to say.
He came in the store, and I could tell that he was extremely disturbed. He says, are you free? Let's go for a ride. He says, I cannot stand my wife. I need to have sex. I could see that he was sexually aroused. He says, oh, can you give me some relief? We were laughing, and he said, oh, Bob, it's just kid stuff, and I've got to have relief. So I was dumb enough to reach over and relieve him in an act of masturbation.
So I don't even know how to respond to that.
I don't even know where to start.
You're a very good friend of mine.
We've ridden the same car multiple times.
However, if you asked me for relief, I would say no. as much as that may pain you.
Well, see, this is where I think that we have different definitions of what being a good friend is. Because if you and I were sitting in a car, and keep in mind, I love your wife, think the world of her.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
If you and I were driving a car and you were complaining and you were in a state of arousal and you said that you needed some relief, I would have immediately taken out my phone. I would have opened up my nearest web browser and I would have looked for massage parlors.
All right. So there's another solution that maybe because of the time, since the technology wasn't available, Bob just was like, well, I guess I got to take care of this. But the relief line, I think, supersedes the Fyre Festival water guy.
100%. Because let's scenario number three. We're sitting in the car driving. Uh-huh. You're complaining about your wife. You're clearly in a state of arousal. You say that you need relief. Is it not on the menu that I could just get out of the car for a couple of minutes and just stare off at the sky, look at the sun, the birds, the mountains, I could just literally look at the gravel for a couple of minutes while you do your business in the car.
I mean, I think there's a lot of options available before your mind should even go to, I'm going to reach over and give this guy a handy of my own.
Yeah. I've spent a lot of time with other men, and I've not once ever sat there and said, you know what? I'm going to jerk this guy off.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Do you like gladiator movies?
So, yeah. So now again, this part isn't even halfway through the documentary, and yet it's still not the most shocking thing. So B abducts Jan. He ends up taking her to Mexico. She's gone for like 35 days. And so eventually he calls his brother, Joe, and asks him to call Marianne, Jan's mom, and says, you know, we need to get written permission to come back in the country because we got married down here in Mexico. Like he did this whole crazy story that he put in Jan's head about, you know, she was part alien and they had a mission and she was going to have to procreate with them and all this stuff. So they get married in Mexico. And so Joe, again, who has already admitted his brother's a sexual pervert and a pedophile, calls Marianne and is like, hey, will you give my brother written permission to bring his child bride, who's also your daughter, back to the States? Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, in the lone bit of common sense that they show in this entire documentary, they don't agree to it. The FBI taps Joe's phone and they end up finding B and Jan in Mexico and bring them back to the States. And B's indicted on kidnapping charges and all that. So the FBI, they made a very simple statement to Bob and Marianne. They said, all you have to do, don't have any contact with B, with Gail, his wife, and with anybody in the Birch Toll family. So then Gail, B's wife, come over one time, and what do? They have a whole conversation with Gail, and she's like, well, I'm going to need you to sign these affidavits stating that, you know, B didn't do what you said he did, or else, you know, we'll have to let him know that, you know, Bob here is a homosexual because he gave my husband a hand job. And what do? They sign the affidavits taking back everything they stated that B did to their daughter.
Well, yeah, isn't that what you're supposed to do?
Now, fortunately, the government still, you know, pursued the case, and B ended up pleading guilty to a felony count of kidnapping. Now, again, crazy, he gets a 5-year sentence, which for whatever reason is reduced to 45 days, and then he gets out after 11 days for good behavior. So apparently in 1974, you could abduct a 12-year-old child, take her mm-hmm. out of the country, mm-hmm. and for 35 days, and your prison sentence would be a third of the time that you actually had abducted the child.
Yeah, that makes sense, no?
I don't know. So, again, you think it's not going to get any crazier than this. So But B is maintaining contact with Jan. And at the same time, he calls Marianne. He's like, Marianne, I'm living in this this trailer home now because, you know, of everything that's going on. Can you come over and talk to me? So she goes over, of course, and then starts to have an affair with B. So the mother of the daughter that gets abducted is now having a sexual affair with the man that abducted and molested her daughter.
Just makes total sense to me.
Does it? Does it now?
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel the worst for Jan because, I mean, this went on for another few years. You know, B was a very manipulative person, put a lot of fear into her about what was going to happen to her, what was going to happen to her family, to her sisters, to her father, if this didn't continue. And thankfully was eventually able to break away. And years later, wrote a book, which eventually turned into this documentary and, filed for a protective order. And after she was granted the protector order, B went home and basically committed suicide, mixed a bunch of pills and alcohol. But she was tormented by this individual for a good 40 years of her life. And had her parents made just maybe one good decision along the way, in fact, her dad, Bob, even mentioned that they may have missed a few things along the line.
I never had an inkling that he had sexual designs on Jan. We weren't really sure even then what a child molester was, I tell you, I don't know how we could have been so gullible when there were so many red flags. But I didn't see the red flags.
I mean, here's where I'm going to call a little bit of bullshit on this. Mm-hmm. Because they mention, both Bob and Marianne mention numerous times in this documentary how they thought it was odd, the amount of attention that B put towards Jan, the fact that he was always taking pictures of her, the fact that, he was always trying to take her on trips and vacations, the fact that, he was sleeping over in her bed. They even had talked about one time Jan and her sister used to have this like huge bedroom, which B eventually ended up building a wall to separate Jan from her sister. Like, at what point are you like, there's something very unnatural about this?
Listen, I've exposed myself to some pretty dark, ugly stuff. And this story was really bizarre. I mean, this was shocking to me. It was surprising to me that here, and keep in mind, this was the filter that I kept putting the story through, which is that this took place in the early 70s, and it was a much simpler time. People weren't on notice about pedophilia. They weren't as aware of the dangers that are lurking at every turn, every corner, whatnot. And yet, at the same time, here is a family who are living in Utah, maybe? I'm going to guess.
I believe it was Ohio, Pocatello, Ohio.
Not Handjob, USA?
Okay. No.
They're living in this small town, and like they befriend another family, and the husband decides he's going to become a little too friendly. He starts screwing around with the mom. He gets a hand job from the father, and then he starts raping the daughter. Honestly, I wish they had interviewed the other children in the family to see whether he had done anything with them either, because he definitely got around that family.
Well, and not only that wasn't, they even talked with other families in town that, had little girls that B seemed to be focusing on. And, there was at least two families that had cut off contact completely with the Birchhold family.
Right.
Because either they saw the interactions that B was having with Jan, or they saw the interactions that B was having with their own children and said, this isn't right.
Right.
So clearly there were some people in that community that could say there's something very, very wrong with, you know, a 30, 40 something year old man that wants to spend all this time with young girls that aren't related to him.
Right.
So, well, again, if you haven't caught it, it's on Netflix, Abducted in Plain Sight. Fantastic. Not in a good way, but just you will be shaking your head through most of it.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that it's true.
It is. I mean, it really, really is. Again, once you think the Fyre Festival is as crazy as it's going to get this year, they drop this documentary, and it's even crazier than you would anticipate.
Right. Very good. Very good.
So some other news stories just to catch up on quickly before we cut out of here. Today, Roger Stone had to go back to court to appear in front of the judge due to an Instagram post he had made. He had posted a picture of the judge on his Instagram page with a crosshairs next to her, which he claimed he initially thought was the Celtic cross. Not sure why. He then took the picture down. Replaced it with the picture without the crosshairs, and then took it down altogether. His lawyers then drafted an apology to the court. But she called him back in today, and kind of tore into him a little bit because he even admitted he didn't write the apology; he just signed it after his lawyers presented it to him.
That makes sense.
And so, you know, she has now imposed a full gag order on Roger Stone. He is not to talk about his case. He is not to contact any of the individuals involved in his case. He can still utilize social media, for fundraising about his case, because apparently he's broke now. But
very convenient.
Any other commentary will not be allowed. So what do we feel the over-under is before Roger Stone eventually breaks his gag order and ends up going to jail?
1 month.
You're giving it a month.
Give him a month.
I'm giving him like a week and a half, because okay. He is such a egomaniac, a megalomaniac, yes, that I don't think he can help himself.
Okay.
So we'll see. So you got a month. We'll see. I got a week and a half. We'll put that on there.
Is that part of our 2019 predictions, or is that separate?
I think that'll be separate.
Okay.
We will revisit the 2019 predictions in the middle of the year and see how each of us are doing.
Okay.
Other than that, it also came out today, if you've been following the election proceedings that were going on down in North Carolina in the 9th District for the House of Representatives, there was decided today the North Carolina Board has declared that there will be a new election for the race between Mark Harris and Dan McCready. Mark Harris was the Republican who had been leading by 905 votes. There was reports of tampering by one of the individuals involved in his campaign. Mark's son gave some very passionate testimony yesterday, talking about email exchanges he had with his father, stating that, he shouldn't get this person involved in his campaign. Some of the campaign techniques this person used were illegal. Brought the son to tears, brought Mark Harris to tears. And Mark Harris had testified initially and then came back to the stand today to state that even he felt at this point that a new election was necessary for the people to feel that their voice was being heard. So apparently this will go from the beginning with a primary process, basically due to a law that was passed in December of 2018 in North Carolina that states if an election isn't certified, rather than just redo the general election, each side will now have to go through a primary, which Mark Harris had just barely won on the Republican side. So odds are he will probably lose in the primary if he even decides to run again. He's been having a number of health issues. And the Democratic challenger, Dan McCready, has not yet announced if he will be running on the Democrat side. Not that you want to see an election result be thrown out, but it is good to see that the process seemed to work in this case, where there was very clear tampering with votes, with absentee votes. And now hopefully the people of the 9th District of North Carolina will get the opportunity to have an uncontested election this time around.
I would say this is one of the elections where you do want to see the results thrown out.
Yeah, no question.
Quite obviously. That. Yeah, I mean, it was, and this is why I think you need to be vigilant when it comes to corruption in a politics. I think you have to, you've got to draw the line quick in terms of behavior. Otherwise, it will become more and more outlandish. And here was an instance where the Republican Party, which was in control of the election board, went to incredible lengths to rig the final count, and in such obvious and just really poor play in ways that were very poor, and it was just obvious. I mean, they may as well have gone out and hired two Nigerian brothers to basically attack the voting box at the end of the night. I mean, some of them were just really obvious, and I think that's why you have to stop corruption when you first see it. Can I say goodbye?
To
Karl Lagerfeld. Passed away.
Yes, he did. At 85 years old, I think.
He defined luxury fashion. He was actually one of the most prolific designers of the 20th and 21st century. A lot of people called him the prototype of the modern fashion industry. Died in Paris this past Tuesday. And while a lot of times we're not sure what his birth year was because it's in much dispute, generally thought he was 85. I mean, the death was announced by Chanel, the famous fashion house from Europe. And, you know, if I... You know, I am a fan of the fashion world. I don't know whether you realize this, but I attend a lot of the shows during New York Fashion Week.
Of course.
The only thing, you know, I was distraught for a good 24 hours, but then quickly the news cycle kicked in and I was talking about Jussie Smollett. But, you know, I didn't think that it could get any worse until earlier today. Peter Tork of the Monkees passed away at age 77, where he died of rare cancer in his family home in Eastern Connecticut. I mean, they say that the greats, you know, die in threes. First, Karl Lagerfeld, now Peter Tork. What's next?
What Jussie will be Smollett's the next career shoe to drop?
I don't know.
I have to admit, I was a big fan of the Monkees.
Were you?
Back in the day, especially because they replayed them on MTV back in the day.
Yes, that they did.
And it was just, you know, catchy tunes. Hey. Where Peter Tork is a dead guy. He's no longer walking around. He used to be in the Monkees. Now he'll be in the ground. He died of rare cancer. No one really knows what that is. I'm sorry, I didn't really get a chance to work that all through. But
You did well enough, my friend.
Not quite a slow jam. I reserve the slow jams for you. I'm the parody guy.
Had we had a little bit more notice time-wise, I think I could have knocked out a slow jam.
I mean, celebrities really need to be a little bit more considerate about when they pass away.
You know what we're going to have to start doing is start sending out the calendar invite, not just to you and I, but every Hollywood celebrity that we're aware of.
Well, we'll hit the publicist. I think it's easier that way.
We'll just do sounds good to me.
All right. Anything else to cover this week, my friend, or have we hit it all?
No, I think we did it.
All right, fantastic. So, again, head over to the Facebook page, vote for This Week in Racism. If you have any suggestions for Drink of the Week, we'd love to hear them. Again, we appreciate the downloads. Feel free to share us with your friends, families, strangers on the street. We're trying to build the Ron and Brian empire here, so every little bit you can do to help us out is greatly appreciated. Brian, as always, I love you, my friend.
I love you more.
All right, we're out of here. Have a good one, everybody.